Eventually, the Buddha sat down beneath this peak palm tree, which we now call Bodhi tree. It's a kind of a fig tree, and there's at a place that's now called Bodh Gaya, in a clear grove, near enough to a city called Uruvela. And the Buddha put these elements of what he'd already developed together. Dhyana, he went very deeply into these meditative states of consciousness. In the absence of views, he seems to have been able to just be perceiving very clearly, like looking, he says, into a clear pool, so you can see all the fish swimming around and the rocks and the coral and all the rest of it. There are no ripples and no distortion. So that's to do with the concentration of his mind, its freedom from unskillful mental states, but also to do with its freedom from views. He's not believing or assuming anything about the mind, about his consciousness, about his being. He turns towards his fears. And this we have in the story of the Buddha's enlightenment in his encounter with Mara, the demon of doubt and death and that sort of thing. And he engages with the mind with this sort of self-fashioning awareness and intelligence. Here's a little quote. What you do if you're at this stage, so I think this is likely to happen, take notes. He prepares a furnace, heats up a crucible. This is an analogy for the mind. He heats up a crucible and places gold in it with a pair of tongs. Then you blow on it, sprinkle water, examine it again and again. This is what a craftsman's doing. He's saying, well, this is what you do in deep meditation with the mind. So the gold becomes flawless, free from dross, pliant, malleable, luminous. And then he can make from it whatever shape he wishes. So the mind in this state is pliant, malleable, and luminous. Buddha analyzes his experience. That seems fairly clear. He tries to tease out the different elements. He takes his insights to a greater depth. Everything is conditioned. Therefore, everything is impermanent. And therefore, everything is instanter, which takes us right back to that first insight. When he was a young man, the world lacks essence. All of that shows up how the mind constricts itself, how the mind creates itself in ways that reinforce old patterns, old habits, and lead us to suffer. In this way, the Buddha somehow or other, all of these things come together, and it's as if the Buddha is able to perceive not just his mental states in quite broad terms. You know, you or I might sit down to meditate and think, oh, I'm feeling a bit anxious today. So that's a very broad kind of awareness. But he's aware of momentary consciousness, instants of his consciousness. He's aware of, according to the text, the deep structures of his consciousness. He sees the various forces, how they merge, how they come together. And then the revelation, then this understanding opens out into a kind of sense of the whole of his life and the whole of all life, how one thing leads to another. Things arise and depend upon conditions. And then something else happens and he's enlightened.